تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام، چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی،
human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
وقتی شخصیت امیرالمومنین رو بشناسه در مقابل او خضوع میکند.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridvi.
I just would like to share with you one sentiment or the feeling of a lady who was among the followers of Ahlul Bayt. And this is a lady who is known as Sauda bint Ammara bin al-Ashtar al-Hamdaniya. And she was from the family which believed in Amir al-Mu'mineen, from the Hamdaniya Yemeni family and the tribe. And she was a poetess in her own right. She was talented in composing poetry. And in the Battle of Siffin, interestingly, she was there with her brother. And she played her part in composing lines in order to encourage. Primarily, what we see is that she is addressing her own brother who was there in the army of Amir al-Mu'mineen, you know, to move forward and fight for the cause of Ali. It seems that she was also a very courageous lady. When we see in history, after the Shahadat of Amir al-Mu'mineen, where Muawiyah comes to power, a situation happened in their area in Yemen that the governor sent there was a very cruel person, Ibn Artab, and the people of the tribe basically wanted to send a complaint to Muawiyah about this officer. But they couldn't find anyone more courageous and willing to go and represent them but this lady by the name of Sauda. And so she accepted this task. She went all the way to Damascus and sought the audience with Muawiyah. She was given the permission to go in. But before she comes in, Muawiyah was briefed about her. And of course, he also knew about the lines of poetry that she had against Muawiyah and her and his family. Where after, you know, coming in, after salam and the normal, you know, discussion after greetings, Muawiyah started reciting the lines of poetry that she had composed. And she says, "Aren't you the one who said this? Shammir ka fa'ali abika ibn Ammar yawm at-ta'ani wa multaq al-aqran." Where she says, addressing her brother, she says, "Get ready like your father, O son of Ammara, on the day of fight when champions meet. وَانْصُرْ عَلِيًّا وَلَحُسَيْنَ وَرَحْتُهُ وَقْصُدْ لِهِنْدٍ وَإِبْنِهَا بِهَوَانٍ. Support Ali and Hussein and his family and target Hind, the mother of Muawiyah, and her son with disgrace. إِنَّ الْإِمَامَ أَخَ النَّبِي مُحَمَّدٍ عَلَمُ الْهُدَى وَمَنَارَةُ الْإِيمَانِ. Because the Imam, the true Imam, is the brother of the Prophet Muhammad, who is the sign, the Imam, who is the sign of guidance, and the minara, the minaret of Iman. فَقُدِ الْجُيُوشِ وَسِرْ أَمَامَ لِوَائِهِ. So therefore, O my brother, lead the armies of Ali, and go ahead of his flag. قُدُمًا بِعَبْيَزِ سَارِ مِنْ وَسِنَانِ. March forward with shining sword and arrows.
Thank you. Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
The World with Reporters.
In an interview with the Al Khanadiq website, the head of Yemen's negotiating delegation for peace, Mohammed Abdus Salam, said the UK presence on Yemen soil is not new, and Yemenis reject any form of foreign presence on their land, and it is their right to fight those who come to invade the country militarily.
Since the beginning of the war, Yemeni people have rejected the foreign presence in any form and cannot accept that. We have made great sacrifices for our freedom and independence and to clean our land from foreign forces. Today, the world is following what is happening in Al Mara Governorate. People of Yemen cannot accept the Saudi British occupation of Al Mara, and we have come to the conviction that armed struggle is necessary to expel foreign forces, whether in Al Mara or elsewhere.
Regarding the developments in Marib, Abdus Salam said the liberated areas from forces backed by the Saudi-led military coalition in the Western Governorate are equal to the size of two Persian Gulf states. The chief negotiator added that battles are still going on in Marib and other fronts. He said the recent initiative offered by Yemen's Ansarullah movement is the key to end the war that the coalition started against Yemen in 2015, but Saudis have no real intentions to move politically. However, he noted that the initiative is still in force.
The other party must accept the initiative presented by Ansarullah because it establishes a comprehensive political solution. The other party will regret it if they didn't respond to this initiative because it aims to stop the war completely and end the suffering of Yemenis. Unfortunately, Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates are the ones who have took the power to decide, and we are ready to talk with the Yemeni parties if they have enough courage to take action by themselves.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has intensified its air raids on Marib in what experts describe as a desperate attempt to back the Saudi-backed forces on the ground, as the Yemeni army keeps marking new advances toward the city of Marib.
Experts believe that Ansarullah has the upper hand as the Yemeni army keeps advancing toward the city of Marib. They say Ansarullah's initiative is a great opportunity for Riyadh to get rid of the quagmire it's stuck with its war on Yemen. Abdul Latif Loshali, Sana.
Seoul Metropolitan Government's Yongsan City Memorial Exhibition Hall is holding an exhibit, July 16th Yongsan. It shows footage for the first time in South Korea of the July 16th, 1950 U.S. bombing of Yongsan, Central Seoul's district, which killed hundreds of civilians.
U.S. B-29 bombers sent to destroy military targets like Yongsan Station switchyard also hit civilian buildings. 3 weeks before, on June 25th, the Korean War had broken out and North Korean forces had crossed the 38th parallel, capturing Seoul just 3 days later.
The footage obtained from the U.S. National Archives and Records Administration shows bombs being dropped and bodies strewn on the ground.
videos and photos edited from it are organized under four themes to highlight wartime suffering and healing after the 1953 armistice.
The bombing killed at least 1,587 of Yongsan's 193,000 residents, and 47 B-29 bombers dropped some 1,500 bombs, as this bomber was highly inaccurate and had to drop many bombs.
The event draws many curious visitors from Seoul and Greater Seoul's smaller cities and towns.
I'm glad the footage was released. Forgetting this incident would be a tragedy. We should not ignore or hide an unexpectedly large number of civilian deaths an aerial bombing unintentionally caused.
West of Seoul in Incheon, General Douglas MacArthur's statue overlooks the port where he led the famed September 1950 landing that led to the South recovering Seoul.
Some people criticize him because he did not take, at least this is what they say, enough care to minimize civilian casualties during the bombing of Yongsan Station in 1950.
In his latest speech on the anniversary of Korea's liberation from Japan's colonial rule at World War II's end, the same day Korea was divided, the South's president urged inter-Korean peace, the exhibit's underlying message.
East and West Germany achieved unification after 45 years. Division is the biggest obstacle to our growth and prosperity, a tenacious barrier to permanent peace. Like Germany, we can remove it.
The exhibit, which opened recently on the anniversary of the bombing and will run at least until this year's end, serves as a powerful reminder war must never happen on the Korean Peninsula again. Jennifer Chang, Seoul.
As part of a new plot to seize further Palestinian lands, the Jewish National Fund, a Zionist organization, has initially agreed to allocate $100 million to register the Palestinian lands in East Al-Quds and the West Bank in name of settlers. The new plan could lead to the eviction of further Palestinians from their homes in the West Bank and East Al-Quds. According to Israeli Peace Now Group, the establishment is encouraging settlers to confiscate more Palestinian lands. The Peace Now noted that the right-wing regime of Israel is seeking to seize more Palestinian lands through the Jewish National Fund.
This regime will do anything in its power to first expand settlements and second to annex more Palestinian areas. And now, with the help of this gang establishment known as the Jewish National Fund, Bennett's regime is working to achieve his goal, that is to back illegal settlement construction.
The fund covers about 17,000 properties, most of them inhabited by Palestinians. Observers say this is the same scenario carried out earlier in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah in Al-Quds. Palestinian families are fighting legal battles to prove their ownership of the properties amid Israeli efforts to evacuate them forcefully from their homes.
The policy has been adopted many times in the past. Today, the Zionist organization is seeking to forge documents and displace more Palestinians both in West Bank and Al-Quds. They are after imposing their full control over the holy city.
The Jewish National Fund is a Zionist organization founded in 1901 to buy and develop land in Ottoman and Mandatory Palestine for Jewish settlers. Earlier this year, Israeli media reported that Israeli authorities recruited the Jewish National Fund to secretly buy Palestinian land for settlers. Palestinians warn that the move by the Jewish National Fund is another proof for Israel's attempt to illegally seize more land in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds by forced expulsion of real owners. They say, however, that they will never back down and they will continue resisting these Israeli plans. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
The second day of the conference vote sessions in Iran's parliament started with reviewing the credentials of Ebrahim Raisi's pick for ICT Minister Issa Zarepour. As is the rule, two pros and two cons speak for or against the nominee, who will then defend his credentials for 30 minutes.
I am proud to announce that during my term in the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance, I launched hundreds of science-based firms. Thanks to these efforts in 2011, we exported $20 million worth of software to other countries.
Mr. Zarepour does not have the expertise to run the ICT ministry. Furthermore, he does not have a fixed approach toward Parliament's bill on the protection of cyberspace. He has repeatedly flip-flopped on the issue. Mr. Zarapur, I ask you to clarify your stance. Do you agree or disagree with the Cyberspace Protection Bill?
By the Cyberspace Protection Bill, the legislator refers to a controversial bill recently introduced in Parliament that seeks to fill the legal voids in the Internet. Some believe if passed into law, the new bill would restrict the activities of cyber users, and others say it would ensure the intellectual property of online businesses in Iran.
The bill is yet to be passed into law and is pending now. I think if it becomes law, it will organize cyberspace in our country. It will protect the rights of online users. It will prevent cyber crimes. Every country has such a law. It's for the good of our people.
I think the draft bill needs to be revised. I do agree that there are serious legal voids with regards to cyberspace in our country, but could the new bill be implemented in a way that it would not make people worry about their online activities?
The credentials of the proposed ministers of intelligence, economy, and health were also put to debate on Sunday. Parliament had scheduled to review at least five nominees each day to wrap up the process by Tuesday. But after 2 days, lawmakers have managed to examine only five of the 19 ministerial picks. While lawmakers have vowed to wrap up the vote of confidence session swiftly, they're already behind schedule. They argue that this is because they're trying to be meticulous in studying the qualifications of the nominees. And this, they say, will lead to a new cabinet that has the least friction with people's representatives. Yusuf Jalali from Iran's parliament.
The National and Islamic Forces in the Gaza Strip commemorated the 52nd anniversary of Al-Aqsa Mosque burning by holding a huge rally along the separating border East Gaza. Al-Aqsa Mosque was burned by an extremist Jew in 1969. Palestinian factions expressed their condemnation of Israel's long history of crimes against Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Today marks the 52nd anniversary of the burning of Al-Aqsa Mosque. This incident shows the true nature of this occupation. Palestinians here vow to continue their battle against this occupation across all occupied lands. We remain united in this endless battle with all possible means.
This rally comes in conjunction with the current Israeli violations in Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque, where Israeli regime is imposing the policy of eviction and displacement of Palestinians and keeping their killing and land-grabbing operations in an attempt to Jewidize Al-Quds and get rid of its people.
Palestinians have gathered here to assert the unity of all Palestinians in the face of occupation. Palestinians are here to say no to any Israeli attempts to Judaize the Palestinian lands. Palestinians won't accept any violation against Al-Quds, and the resistance will go on until liberation of all Palestine.
The resistance declared it won't allow Israel to violate Palestinian sanctities and keep the blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip, as they agreed to activate the popular resistance and the return of clashes by the separation fence, stressing they won't remain silent over the Israeli crimes.
Palestinians have proved that they will keep their resistance in the face of all Israeli projects that aim to demolish the Palestinian identity. Al-Quds is the symbol of our history. Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque are our red lines, and we won't accept any Israeli violation of our holy sites. Israeli regime must be held accountable for any action against Al-Quds.
52 years after Al-Aqsa Mosque was set ablaze, Palestinians here call for defending Al-Quds with all possible means until its complete freedom from occupation. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Taliban leaders are busy in these days as they are facing the challenge of good governance in Afghanistan. To this end, they have decided to pick up some key steps to prove their capabilities by unveiling a new framework for governance within next days. The Taliban say they aim to keep up consultations with former high-ranking officials, prominent political leaders, and the rest of political activists in order to establish an inclusive government.
We want to establish a government in which all sides, including political groups, ethnic groups, and religious groups, have their share in. We are trying to reach an agreement with other sides in this regard. We are not after war. We are seeking peace and calm for our country.
In the meantime, top Afghan political leaders urged the Taliban to continue its efforts to attract more local and international support. This will not happen, they warned, unless the Taliban listen to the voice of people.
I do not expect the peace plan developed entirely by the U.S. to be fruitful. Therefore, regional countries need to take the initiative and work together on the issue, or at least put pressure on the U.S. to work honestly.
Taliban war comes as thousands of Afghans seek to get out of their country via Kabul International Airport since Taliban took control over the city almost a week ago. The rising number of horrified people in and around the airport has created a big chaos there, resulting to the death of 12 so far. Two of the victims, including a member of Afghanistan's national football team, lost their lives after they fell from this flying U.S. military aircraft. The incident shocked the entire world. Taliban say they plan to investigate reported cases of atrocities by their members against civilians, including journalists. Taliban are going to set up separate teams for dealing with Afghanistan's internal security and financial crisis as well. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The humanitarian situation in Yemen is worsening amid the ongoing Saudi war and siege. A recent report by the United Nations Population Fund suggests that 20.7 million Yemenis require humanitarian assistance, while over a million pregnant and breastfeeding women are projected to suffer from acute malnutrition throughout 2021. The COVID-19 pandemic, along with the torrential rain and the currency collapse, has also contributed to the deterioration of the already catastrophic humanitarian situation in Yemen, the report said. For instance, by the end of June 2021, nearly 7,000 cases of COVID-19 and more than 1,300 associated deaths had been reported, amid concerns that the real number of infections were being underreported. Earlier, the United Nations reported that it had only received half of what was required for the humanitarian response plan of 2021, which was estimated at $3.85 million, despite donors stepping up their support compared to 2020.
Observers say Yemen will continue to face a devastating humanitarian situation that risks turning into famine if the international community does not act urgently. They say the only solution is to pressure Saudi Arabia to lift the siege imposed on millions of Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
The UK government came under immense fire today after MPs condemned the catastrophic British failures in Afghanistan. During Wednesday's parliamentary debate on the subject, Boris Johnson desperately attempted to convince MPs that Britain's withdrawal wasn't chaotic at all, but with little success.
Mr. Speaker, I think it would be fair to say that the events in Afghanistan have unfolded and the collapse has been faster than I think even the Taliban themselves predicted. What is not true is to say that the UK government was unprepared or did not foresee this.
Before the debate even started, anti-war Labour MPs gathered outside Westminster with anti-war veteran Jeremy Corbyn to denounce British foreign policy.
Many of the MPs who have been supportive of the continued war and occupation in Afghanistan will be sitting today during this debate, which has already begun. Now, this will be very awkward for them, as many of the anti-war MPs who have criticised British foreign policy, particularly in Afghanistan for many, many years, have been proven right following the latest developments in Afghanistan.
British military failures was not the only focus of criticism. Concern over the lack of willingness to help Afghan refugees was expressed too. For the time being, the UK is refusing to recognise the Taliban's administration, but have agreed to accept some refugees, but only time will tell if Britain will honour this pledge or not. Robert Carter, London.
Russian President Vladimir Putin and German Chancellor Angela Merkel held talks in the Kremlin. This is their last summit meeting as heads of state because Merkel will not participate in the upcoming parliamentary elections in Germany. Her farewell visit took place on the anniversary of the alleged poisoning of opposition leader Alexei Navalny.
Despite the fact that we have different opinions, I think it is good that we talk to each other and we intend to keep in touch further.
After the meeting with the Russian president, Merkel called on Putin to release Navalny. Putin, however, said the fight against corruption should not be used as an instrument of political struggle, adding the opposition figure was convicted not for his political activities, but for criminal offenses against foreign partners. Littrow also touched upon the situation in Afghanistan. Putin said Moscow's priority is to prevent terrorists from entering neighboring countries under the guise of refugees.
We know Afghanistan, and we know how this country is organized and how counterproductive it is to try to impose unusual forms of government and public life on it. Any such socio-political experiments have never been successful and led only to the destruction of states, degradation of their political and social systems.
In addition to bilateral relations, the fight against the coronavirus pandemic, the conflict in eastern Ukraine, the situation in Belarus, as well as Nord Stream 2 and the role of Ukraine as a transit country for Russian gas were discussed.
Merkel managed to defend the Nord Stream. The Americans pressed on her. Germany needs Russian energy. Regarding the situation in Afghanistan, here Germany fully listened to what the Americans were saying, and now Germany has received it in full. The Americans are living in an ugly way, having substituted all their allies in the NATO alliance. This once again showed that Germans that it's absurd to rely on the US. America's visit shows that the stake on in America is doubtless wrong, and Germany during the reign of Merkel has repeatedly succumbed to influence from overseas.
On August 22nd, Merkel will fly to Kyiv. Putin asked her to influence the country's authorities to fulfill all obligations on Donbas. Berlin has always been one of Moscow's main partners in politics and economics. The Russian president expressed hope that with the new leadership in Germany, in the near future, it would be possible to continue the dialogue on resolving the conflict in southeastern Ukraine. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Turkey says it will decide on Taliban's government recognition after it is formed. Turkish foreign minister said Ankara will not rush into recognizing a Taliban government in Afghanistan as it is still too early for this step.
We are keeping up dialogue with all sides, including the Taliban. We view positively the messages that the Taliban have given so far, whether to foreigners, diplomatic individuals, or its own people. We hope to see these in action as well.
In response to a question regarding Turkey's contact with the Taliban, Çavuşoğlu said Turkey had invited the political wing of the Taliban to Turkey before they had entered Kabul. Earlier, Turkish security sources said Ankara had dropped plans to guard and operate Kabul's airport after the withdrawal of NATO forces from Afghanistan, following footage and reports of chaos taking place there after Taliban's takeover. Turkey says its offer to provide technical and security assistance at the Kabul airport will be further discussed with the U.S.
Turkey will follow the lead of other countries in recognizing a Taliban government in Afghanistan. If the U.S. and EU countries recognize a government formed by Taliban, Turkey will follow in their footsteps. However, I don't think that Turkey will consider the Taliban government as a strategic partner in the region. We expect a delegation from the Taliban to visit Turkey for talks over the transition phase, just like it is taking place with other countries in the region.
The Turkish president had announced last week his readiness to meet with the Taliban leadership. Turkey says so far the Taliban is sending positive messages, hoping that it will be followed with positive actions as well. Turkey is now concerned about the refugee influx it is going to have after Taliban's takeover in Afghanistan. This comes as it has been struggling to revive the economic situation in the country with a handful of refugees already there amid the coronavirus pandemic. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
If an audio clip posted online, Amir Khan Muttaqi, the chief of the Taliban's guidance council, described U.S. actions in Afghanistan as tyranny. He said all Afghanistan is secure, but the airport, which is managed by the Americans, has anarchy. We now present you an article written by Peter Beaumont. The piece is titled, Opposition Leader Says Afghan Civil War Unavoidable If Taliban Refuse Talks. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. One of the main figures still leading Afghan opposition to the Taliban's takeover of the country, Ahmad Massoud, has warned that a new civil war is inevitable without a comprehensive power-sharing agreement in Afghanistan. Ahmad Massoud, the son of Ahmad Shah Massoud, who opposed the Taliban in the 1990s and was assassinated 2 days before suspicious 9/11 events in 2001, told the Dubai-based Al Arabiya television channel that war was unavoidable if the Taliban refused dialogue. He said, "We confronted the Soviet Union and we will be able to confront the Taliban." Massoud, who is the leader of the National Resistance Front of Afghanistan, has set up base in the Panjshir Valley, north of Kabul, where the former vice president, Amrullah Saleh, has also taken refuge. The Taliban said on Sunday, 22nd of August, that hundreds of its militants were heading to the Panjshir Valley to control it after local state officials refused to hand it over peacefully. Massoud's warning was delivered as the Taliban moved to demonstrate its controlled areas immediately around the chaotic Kabul airport, when NATO said 20 people died in recent days. As witnesses reported on Sunday, 22nd of August, that Taliban militants were firing into the air and using batons to force people to form orderly queues outside the main gates and not gather at the perimeter of the airport. The militant group that retook the Afghan capital recently after 20 years said it was seeking complete clarity on the evacuation plan being led by foreign forces. However, it was not clear if the Taliban's increasingly organized presence around the airport would also result in it controlling who is able to enter the airport and leave the country, as the group's spokespeople used the situation at the airport to criticize the United States. Britain's Armed Forces Minister James Hippie said the flow outside the airport had improved because the Taliban were marshalling people into separate queues for the United States and the United Kingdom evacuation. And that is making a big difference to the size of the crowds outside the UK gate and allowing us to process people much more quickly. I think that is very encouraging. In an audio clip posted online, Amir Khan Muttaqi, the chief of the Taliban's guidance council, described U.S. actions in Afghanistan as tyranny. He said, all of Afghanistan is secure, but the airport, which is managed by the Americans, has anarchy. He added, the U.S. should not defame itself, should not embarrass itself to the world, and should not give this mentality to our people that the Taliban are a kind of enemy. The Taliban's remarks emerged as Joe Biden activated the U.S. Civil Reserve Air Fleet, ordering aircraft from six commercial carriers into service to clear the backlog of evacuees arriving in locations outside Afghanistan. Facing mounting criticism over his handling of the Afghanistan crisis, the U.S. president, who has defended his decisions, was due to speak again to give an update on the evacuation efforts in Kabul. Earlier on Sunday, an NBC News opinion poll showed his job approval rating had dipped below 50% for the first time. Biden administration officials also claimed on Sunday, 22nd of August, that they were considering the so-called creative ways to get Americans and others into Kabul airport. As Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced, he had called a G7 leaders meeting to discuss the crisis in Afghanistan and urged the international community to find ways to prevent it from escalating. The deaths outside of Kabul airport have come as a new perceived threat from the militant group in Afghanistan has led U.S. military planes to perform rapid diving combat landings at the airport, which is surrounded by Taliban militants. Other aircraft have fired flares on takeoff, a tactic often used to confuse possible heat-seeking missiles targeting the planes. A NATO official also appeared to concede the risk in the Taliban's increased assertion of control beyond the airport's perimeter, saying, "Our forces are maintaining strict distance from outer areas of the Kabul airport to prevent any clashes with the Taliban." A journalist on board an evacuation convoy that left the downtown Kabul hotel early on Sunday, 22nd of August, told Agence France-Presse that a huge crowd of Afghans were camped at the intersection close to the airport, many sleeping in the open, who crowded the buses with their documents asking to be let on. Families hoping to escape were crowded between the barbed wire boundaries of an unofficial no man's land separating Taliban militants from U.S. troops and the remnants of an Afghan Special Forces brigade helping them. He said, "As soon as they saw our convoy, they got up and ran towards the buses." With the Taliban moving to assert its control over the country a week after seizing power, the group called for the reopening of schools and colleges and said it would meet provincial governors across the country. A Taliban official who spoke on the condition of anonymity said, "We're not forcing any former government official to join or prove their allegiance to us. They have a right to leave the country if they would like to." He added, "We're seeking complete clarity on foreign forces' exit plan," adding, "Managing chaos outside Kabul airport is a complex task." The UK Ministry of Defence, the MOD, said conditions on the ground remained extremely challenging, but it claimed we are doing everything we can to manage the situation as safely and securely as possible. The evacuation of foreigners and Afghans linked to foreign countries remained fraught on Sunday, 22nd of August, after the United States and Germany warned citizens to avoid traveling to Kabul airport, citing security risks including from thousands of desperate people gathering trying to flee from the Taliban and Daesh. The Taliban's swift takeover of Afghanistan has sparked fears of reprisals and a return to the harsh version of tough law that the militant group exercised when it was in power two decades ago. However, Taliban officials have blamed the anarchy at Kabul airport on U.S. occupation forces, whilst U.S.-led forces have blamed the militant group for blocking many from reaching the airport.
Thank you. It's night, dark and cold. I walk in the city alone in the crowd.
Islamic laws.
Every street, every store is filled with colors and smiles as before. I know clouds are hidden behind these faces. Is there anyone who has a sunny heart? I put on my headphones and play the song, which repeats in chanty whisper.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio and the program Islamic Laws, in which we are going to talk about the rules and fatwas of Ayatollah Khamenei, which are related to the month of Muharram and mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Before everything, let me express my condolences to the Imam al-Mahdi. May Allah hasten his reappearance and all the Muslims all around the world, especially the Shias, on this being the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and his companions and family members. Like always, we are joined by our dear guest, Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, assalamu alaikum, and thank you for accepting our invitation.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me on this program.
So as I mentioned, today we will answer to the questions asked from the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid, according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the Supreme Leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij in his teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that. SubhanAllah.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Islamic Laws from IRIB English Radio. Again, I would like to express my condolences on the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Sheikh Jabid, in the previous program, the last question that I asked you was about the viewpoint of Ayatollah Khamenei about some of the ways of mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salam which caused a serious harm on the body.
Yes.
Like tatbir and lashing oneself with chains and with blades and so on and so forth. I would like to ask you to give us a summary of your answer, and inshallah I will ask a related question.
Well, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I would like to give Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion in brief about the practice of tatbir, or what is known in Farsi as qamazani, but the Arabic, the Arabs use the word tatbir. Of course, Ayatollah Khamenei, may Allah grant him long life, is of the view that any practice that causes bodily harm or leads to defaming the faith is haram, any act. Now, whether it is in the form of tatbir or whether it is in the form of playing musical instruments, it's forbidden. Therefore, the believers have to steer clear of the practice of tatbir. And there's no doubt that the practice of tatbir actually destroys the image of Ahlul Bayt and the image of this school, peace-loving school, and of course the damage and the loss that it inflicts on the religion, of course, is so tremendous. Now, when it comes to whether, in fact, tatbir is considered to be in common view as a form or as a manifestation of mourning or as adari, of course, Ayatollah Khamenei is of the view that it has never been considered as a form of azadari, and it is not a manifestation of azadari at all, and no one considers hitting oneself. And self-flagellation, as you know, this the term is used very often, and this is a term used by Christians, of course. But even this same term is used in connection with the Shia practice of tatbir, of course. While that the idea, the concept is totally different, and
it's a new phenomenon.
It's
as
a
you
new
mentioned.
Phenomenon. Yes.
We do not have any precedence in the history, and. I've seen some Shia, they refer, I mean, when they are going to talk about the reason for tatbir, they are referring to, in their view, what was done by Lady Zainab
Zainab was not an infallible leader. She was Imam Hussein's, of course, she was the greatest lady after her mother.
That's true.
And, of course, her practice is not hujjah.
Yeah.
Is not
a proof.
Is not a proof, okay? We cannot ascribe, or we cannot rely on her conduct to prove our side of the story. Okay, if the sufferings, if the agonies, the suffering, the grief, and the pain she suffered, if we suffered the pain she suffered, actually, we could have done
died maybe.
Yeah, we could have died and inflicted greater harm.
That's
on
true.
On ourselves. But okay, it's reported that she hit her head against the call the kajawa,
yeah.
Okay, or the cradle whatsoever.
And the other point is that I've seen many great scholars and researchers, they doubt about this.
Yeah,
very
the same very
many
act,
scholars,
yes.
They believe that no, I mean, it's not an authentic,
yes.
Narration in the history. She never did that. But even if she did so, as you mentioned, it was under special conditions. And at the end of the day, I mean, she's very great personality. But for Islamic laws, we are taking them from the Quran and the narrations of the
infallible imams.
But as I mentioned again, many scholars, they reject that, and they believe that it's not proved and it's not an authenticated event, as claimed by some of the Shia.
But one thing I wanted just to add from the viewpoint of Supreme Leader Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, because some people want to practice tatbir in their own houses or maybe in their own closed rooms or wherever in private, not in public, of course. Ayatollah Khamenei is of the view that whether it is of the view that whether it is practiced privately or publicly, even then it's not allowed. Tatbir is not allowed. The practice of Qamazin is not allowed, and of course it's a kind of defamation. It's not considered to be a manifestation of azadari, a manifestation of mourning and lamentation for the for Imam Hussein and his. And his kith and kin, of course.
I walk in the night with millions of stars. Your eyes pull me to you. Who are you? I walk in the day. With millions of angels, I see you in all these faces. Who are you? One step I fade away, the next step I'm born again. You're flowing in my veins. Who are you? Wherever I get tired, you call me from far and near. Whenever I get thirsty, you start to melt. Say to me, desire, desire, dream some more. Desire, desire, dream.
Now, another example which is related to our discussion is what is again done among, few Shias in some countries, and that is walking barefooted on fire. So, again, we know that it will cause a kind of harm to the body. So, what is the fatwa of Ayatollah Khamenei regarding this very action?
Well, Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion is very clear. No one from the religious authorities, as far as I know, endorses or allows this practice, the practice of walking on fire. And obviously, it is not considered to be an act of azadari. It's not considered to be a manifestation of azadari. No one from the believers considers this walking on barefoot on fire to be an act of azadari. Just one has to think about the very practice. Has anyone done in the history or in the entire history ever since from the time of the imams as of today, I think it's a new phenomenon. It's just it serves to damage and to tarnish and the image of the school of Ahlul Bayt, and it has no other role to play. It doesn't have any place in the Shia teachings. In the religion of Ahlul Bayt.
And the point is that, as you rightly mentioned, we are following the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt.
Sure.
Now, Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam was present in Karbala. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, according to many narrations, he was a child.
A child,
he
yes.
watched all the scenes. Now, these two Imams who were present and they suffered a lot, walking barefooted on fire was something, to be encouraged, then it should be done by Imam Sajjad alayhi salam.
They should have
Imam
encouraged, Baqir. Yes.
They suffered, they were the main people who suffered, Lady Zainab salamullahi alayha, but there is no record in the history telling us that these two Imams or the next Imam, they have done any of such actions which cause, a great and a serious harm, like tatbir, lashing with chains and walking barefooted. And the other point that Sheikh Jawid, I would like to share is the fact that sometimes when I think about these actions, of course it is done by few people.
Yes,
I mean they
by
are
few people.
In minority, and after the famous fatwa of Ayatollah Khamenei, alhamdulillah, the majority of the Shia, they are refraining from such actions. But still I believe that the action done by this minority need to be somehow removed. Why? Because when we refer to a book like Kitab al-Kafi, the first chapter is about Kitab al-Aql wal-Jahl, about intellect and ignorance. When you read the narrations of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, you will come to this conclusion that Shia school of thought is the school of intellect.
Reason and
reasoning.
Sensibility.
And exactly. So, I mean, what is done by these few people is absolutely against what is preached by the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt in these narrations.
You're
this
right.
is giving a negative picture out of Shia school of thought. And again, I ask all the dear listeners who are listening to this program, please refer to the viewpoint and the fatwa of the Shia scholars when it comes to these actions. Please inform others who may not know the fatwa of Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, Grand Ayatollah Sistani, and other great Shia scholars. And inshallah, we hope for a day that gradually, inshallah, we will get rid of all these bad actions which are giving a bad picture out of Shia school of thought. And I hope that through this program and other programs produced by the Shia media all over the world, people, inshallah, gradually will come to this understanding that it has nothing to do with the real mourning for Imam al-Hussein.
Sure.
Sheikh Javed, unfortunately we are running out of time. Again, I would like to thank you for your presence in this program. And again, I would like to express my condolences for these sad days of the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companions and family members. Inshallah, we will continue answering these questions in the following session. Till then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave, mankind's heart it reawaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred ring. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new land.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.